You're listening to Vatican Radio.
Here in Rome, a meeting organized by the U.S. Embassy to the Holy See in conjunction with the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops focused on maritime trafficking and modern slavery at sea. The July meeting shone the spotlight on the global scourge that violates the human dignity of laborers at all stages of the seafood supply chain and aquaculture industries. Kerry Johnston, Deputy Director of the U.S. State Department's Office to Monitor and Combat Trafficking in Persons, was at the Rome meeting to connect with the USCCB's advisory group called COMPASS, which is a coalition of organizations and ministries promoting the abolition of slavery at sea. She told me that it was a wonderful occasion which brought together people from both Catholic and non-Catholic organizations who are working together to combat this crime.
What I thought is so fantastic about this gathering is that it's bringing people both from religious organizations, other civil society groups, government representatives, as well as the private sector. And it really takes a chorus of voices to try to combat this crime and this problem that seems to be growing and evolving. And to get ahead of it and stay ahead of it, we really all need to work together, which is one of the reasons also we're so thrilled that Pope Francis has really brought his voice with such moral clarity to this issue that is indeed one of the most challenging issues of our time.
He said repeatedly that human trafficking is a wound in the flank of humanity, and it's a growing evil.
Absolutely. And both in his words, in, I think, using his moral authority to try to motivate people to address this problem and stop the crime and this horrible behavior. He's also used his convening power to bring together leaders on at least three different occasions where he's hosted summits at the Vatican. At the beginning of June, the ambassador who heads our trafficking office at the State Department participated in a summit that the Pope convened with judges and prosecutors from around the world, putting them on the line that they need to be doing everything they can to actually enforce laws that most governments do have banning this crime, but to make sure that we're doing everything we can. He began this series of three events bringing together religious leaders, also working with faith leaders around the world of all different faiths, really to make sure that everyone is using their moral authority. And we're thrilled to see that kind of very proactive and visionary leadership.
I know a lot of nuns who are very much involved in not only in preventing human trafficking, but also working with the victims. Even now, in the run-up to the Olympics, there has been a huge impetus of awareness raising. So the religious are, in fact, very involved. Are they helpful? Have they an impact?
They're critically helpful. You mentioned the important role of many nuns and other religious organizations in working with trafficking victims. They are indeed, in many places around the world, sort of the frontline service providers. They're often the first people that trafficking victims have interactions with. They may be the ones who explain to them this is actually a crime under international law and many domestic laws, and they provide critical services to trafficking victims in many places where there are no other people providing services to them. So they're very critical in that capacity. They also, many nuns and other religious organizations and people of religious communities can be very helpful for all of us who are working to better understand the problem, because they often have unique insight and access to particularly the trafficking victims that are so critical to all of our understanding of the problem and our efforts to combat it.
Is that because the trafficking victims maybe trust these people?
Definitely. And this convening of the advisory group of COMPASS, where we're focused on trafficking at sea, it is largely through some of the pastorship at ports, for example. And they may be of different religions themselves, or frankly of no religion, the victims themselves. But often when they come into port, the people who can provide them basic assistance and perhaps a sympathetic ear are often Catholics and other religious organizations that serve that really important role.
Can you explain a little bit about trafficking at sea? Who is trafficked at sea and why?
Yeah, thank you. It's a really important question, particularly because I think a lot of people, when we hear about trafficking and sea, we think about migration and smuggling issues. And there's an important distinction between smuggling and human trafficking. Smuggling, as we would define it, international law does, is really an immigration crime. It's a crime against a state and its immigration policies. And many people will voluntarily pay smugglers to help them cross borders, usually out of desperation because they want to work in other countries. They may be fleeing conflict. Often, people who willingly pay a smuggler at some point along the line become trafficking victims. human trafficking is a crime against individuals where they are exploited through force, fraud, or coercion. It may be sexual exploitation. It may be labor exploitation through forced labor. What we see on the seas and trafficking, human trafficking at sea, very frequently is within the fishing industry and seafood industry. And the media has done a phenomenal job in recent months, and I'd say the last year and a half in particular, in highlighting and helping us better understand how some fishermen, often lured there through false promises or, you know, fraudulent recruitment practices, even if they're voluntarily signed up to be working on a fishing boat, often find out that once they get there, they're stuck on a boat for months, sometimes years at a time. The abuses that take place on some of the boats, certainly not all throughout the fishing industry, but the incidents that we do hear about are very disturbing.
To my mind come the images of Southeast Asia, of the fishermen, I think, from Vietnam, Laos. Mm-hmm. Am I correct in thinking that's a huge chunk of these people?
Yes, Southeast Asia is definitely the area, certainly, that the media has brought a lot of attention to in recent years. As you mentioned, Cambodian, Burmese or Myanmar refugees through Thailand and Malaysia, in Indonesia, throughout Southeast Asia. That is a common problem. Unfortunately, it is not limited to Southeast Asia. We also hear stories of trafficking victims at sea on fishing boats around Africa, South America. I mean, it's truly a global problem. Europe as well, in European waters.
Our focus very much is on the migrants who are crossing the Mediterranean, obviously, all the tragedies that are happening. But you just specified that it's actually two crimes that are mm-hmm. taking place. Is your office active within this particular aspect?
Definitely. It's an issue that we're tracking very closely. And we are concerned, as I mentioned, that often people who maybe voluntarily pay someone to help them get across a border or get to a place where they have better opportunities at some point along the way, sometimes from the very beginning through fraudulent recruitment, sometimes along the way, or, you know, once they reach a destination country, become victims of trafficking. So a couple things that we're very focused on are encouraging governments and international organizations to make sure that they're screening migrants and refugees for potential trafficking victims. And that's important because a lot of times, if victims are not identified, then they get right back into the same pattern and they're vulnerable for re-trafficking. So making sure that they're identified, they get appropriate services and help so that they're not continuing to be vulnerable. The other major area that we're focused on increasingly is prevention. When you have large groups of very vulnerable people that in some ways I sort of think of them as sitting ducks for traffickers, and the traffickers are primarily motivated by profit and see large groups of people that are easy targets. So we want to make sure that governments and international organizations and civil society and religious communities are doing everything they can to raise awareness, both among the potential victims, but also among the communities where many of the refugees and migrants are currently staying, so that people understand what signs to look for, what are the indicators of human trafficking, so they can warn people, you know, don't be fooled, there are other options, and you have services available to you that can help you provide for yourself and your family through legal means that will not lead to exploitation.
What about awareness raising for civil society at large? I mean, are there signs that we should all be looking out for? Is there anything we can do?
Indeed, there are a lot of things for civil society across the board. Civil society, religious communities, consumers as well, the private sector, and governments, all of us have a role to play in combating this crime. Some things to look out for are whether or not people have the ability to retain their passport if they end up in a situation of employment, whether in a private home as a domestic worker, for example, or on a fishing boat or in a factory somewhere. If they don't have their passport, then that is often a means of exploitation that the employers or the traffickers can control someone. Also, if people don't have a contract or they don't understand their contract, it's not in a language they understand and no one has explained it to them. Unfortunately, we often see even if people do have contracts, they're switched once they get into the job, or they're just forced to do something that isn't in their contract. So neither of those are the complete solutions, but those are some common indicators to look for.
And who gets trafficked?
It is a wide range of people, and it would be very surprising. I think for many, it happens, you know, throughout the world, including in the United States, in the United Kingdom. Here in Italy, there are domestic victims all over. I think the image that most people have is of poor and uneducated people. And globally, they are probably predominantly more vulnerable. But in fact, it can happen anywhere to anyone.
We're talking about men, women, children, young people.
All of the above. Sadly.
There's been a lot of awareness raising as regards the issue, and you were mentioning a series of initiatives. Has there actually been progress in halting the phenomenon, or at least in having an impact on what has been happening in recent years? Have you seen any fruits to your labor?
It's a very good question, and it's particularly hard to measure the size of the problem because it's such a hidden crime. And when victims of other crimes often will come forward, they'll come to law enforcement and say, someone stole my bag, or, you know, if it's a physical assault in normal circumstances. Whereas trafficking victims often don't have access. They may be physically limited, or they may be coerced through psychological coercion or fear. And the traffickers are often lying to them and telling them that if you go to law enforcement or you talk to any authorities, they will arrest you, they will deport you. And in fact, that does happen in many countries. That's one of the reasons that we think it's so important to identify trafficking victims as victims, recognize them as such. And it's very important that governments don't penalize the victims for crimes that they were forced to commit, whether they're immigration crimes. Any nonviolent crimes that a victim is forced to commit, we believe, should not be penalized. They shouldn't be prosecuted for that. And governments should be careful before sending victims back to countries where they may face either abuse or further re-victimization without identifying them as such.
But you're optimistic as to the way you're going, should we say?
Yes, and I would answer part of that question also in terms of awareness raising. I do think our understanding of the crime and traffickers' modus operandi is increasing. They're changing, so we have to constantly stay on our toes and increase our understanding. But there are a few things that people can do that also, I think, give me hope. Consumers can take more and more steps to make sure that they are not producing goods and services that have forced labor somewhere in the supply chain. There's a good organization and a website people can go to called slaveryfootprint.org that people can actually look and see what's the likelihood of forced labor or slavery in the different goods and products that they purchase, services that they purchase. Also, businesses can and should take an increasing look and be very proactive in making sure that there is no slavery or forced labor in their supply chains. And we recently in the State Department, working with a labor rights organization, released a new website designed for private sector to look and see where there are vulnerabilities in different countries and sectors. That is called responsiblesourcingtool.org that businesses can go to try to be proactive in rooting out forced labor in their supply chains as well.
Well, that's good. I mean, we all know what fair trade is because of decades of publicity and hearing about it all the time. Just finally, what do you hope to have achieved during this last tour of yours to France, I understand, now to Italy? Where else are you going?
Just those two. It's a lovely trip. But most importantly, the two key meetings that I had in both of those. When you mentioned that I was in France, I was in Lyon meeting with Interpol, which also is playing an increasingly and very important role in law enforcement and working with police and governments around the world to make sure that they are proactively identifying both the trafficking victims, but also the traffickers who are perpetrating the crimes. Many governments have laws that they're not enforcing, so that's a very important role. And then here in Rome, meeting with the Advisory Council of Compass and seeing just how many people are bringing their voices to this so that the chorus of voice can get louder and stronger and raise awareness and improve all of our collective efforts.
That was Kerry Johnston, Deputy Director of the U.S. State Department's Office to Monitor and Combat Trafficking in Persons.